Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Okay, everyone wants to talk about last night's Grammys, and we will, but let me tell you what else is happening on a very busy, action-packed program. We've got a live set from singer-songwriter Laura Cantrell. Her music rose out of the country Americana tradition. And we'll also get a chance to meet with filmmaker Godfrey Reggio, who, along with composer Philip Glass, released a startling movie 30 years ago called Kyanaskatsi, and the art film world has never been the same since. And to hear Philip Glass tell it, we should be listening closely when Godfrey Reggio talks.
It's uncanny at how Godfrey has always been able to look a little bit into the future. I said, you know, very few of us can look in the future, and not, you seem to be able to pick up the curtain and take a peek around and get a little glimpse of something that's going to happen. He denies that. He says, no, he doesn't. He can't do that. But I've seen him do it.
Well, Philip Glass and Godfrey Reggio are back with a new collaboration. We'll hear more when the filmmaker joins us later. But first,
and the Grammy goes to... Random Access Memories Death Song.
The Grammy Awards were televised last night, some of them at least. Most of us watched at home, some of us playing Grammy Bingo at soundcheck.org as we watched. But Ben Cesario watched it live in person for the New York Times and joins us on the line from L.A. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
So what's your headline for last night's awards?
I feel like it was kind of a night of fluke winners who became really big. You know, the big winners were Daft Punk, which had four awards, including Album and Record of the Year, and also Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Won Best New Artist and three other awards, and Lorde, and you know Macklemore and Ryan Lewis are and Lorde are people that you know most listeners had never heard of a year and a half ago,
right?
And you know completely came out of left field and used social media and wound up you know really conquering top 40 radio. And you know it in a way that you know that's kind of a fluke story, but that's also just the way it happens now in the music business.
Yeah,
you know the avenues to fame are different than they used to be.
And when it happens twice, with Macklemore and Ryan Lewis on the one hand and Lorde on the other, maybe once it starts happening that often, maybe it's not a fluke anymore. Maybe it's the new normal.
I don't think it's quite the new normal, but I think it's one of the new normal ways that people can break in. But there's still, you know, the machine still works.
Yeah.
And you know, Daft Punk, to me, it's a fluke because they're so weird. You know, I mean, they're French guys who wear robot helmets and don't speak in the microphone and made this record that sounds like a, you know, retrofuturistic disco from 1982. You know, it was a highly anticipated record. It was ubiquitous last year. It was pretty much loved everywhere. So I think that, you know, it deserved the nominations and it deserved a win.
So it won Album of the Year for Random Access Memories and Record of the Year for the single Get Lucky. And one of the things, Ben, that we've come to expect from the Grammys is odd and unexpected collaborations in live performance. Daft Punk with Nile Rodgers was not a surprise. Pharrell Williams, not a surprise, because they're both on Get Lucky. What did you think of the performance that added Stevie Wonder into the mix?
I don't think it added a tremendous amount to the performance, but I don't think it took away from it. What did you think?
I thought it was a great performance. As you say, I wasn't quite sure what Stevie Wonder's contribution was, although it did give them a chance to, you know, fold in one of his songs in what, by my count, was at least a four-song mashup there.
Yeah. You know, I think it kind of worked for Daft Punk because part of their whole thing is just sort of calling up, you know, people they love and saying, let's jam.
Yeah.
And that's part of the whole story of this record, which, you know, it was hilarious to hear Paul Williams explain that in the acceptance for Album of the Year, you know, about just the phone rings and it's two robots who want to make a record with him.
Right.
So, you know, it kind of worked for them, although, I didn't think it was, by far the best performance of the night.
Well, this is from the Grammys last night. You'll hear a big cheer because Daft Punk were hidden behind a blackened studio window, and then when they were suddenly made visible, you'll hear the audience's response. Daft Punk with Stevie Wonder, Nile Rodgers of Chic, whose song Le Freak you heard woven in there, and Pharrell Williams doing Get Lucky, the Grammy-winning record of the year, last night's telecast featuring Daft Punk, and one of the multiple winners at last night's telecast. Ben Cesario is music reporter of the New York Times, on the line with us, still in L.A., and so, Ben, for you, looking at some of the collaborations that we heard and saw last night, what did work for you?
I really liked Imagine Dragons with Kendrick Lamar. That was one that I didn't necessarily expect, you know, to be great and would seem to have some of that Grammys hallmark of, you know, we took one artist in this category and
right.
another artist in the other and threw them together. But, I think the musicians just made it work. They really... You know, they really put in a passionate show and seem to gel together. I like that a lot.
Okay, tonight is for everybody to understand me. I need y'all to recognize the plan B is to win your heart right here where we at the Grammys. My name is Kendrick Lamar. Words like a sword in the hands of a Spartan in Compton. Bury me alive, bury me with pride, bury me with berries. The forensic shoot and cherry wine. Thank you very much, but tonight's my night and I'm very fine.
Well, your colleague John Pareles used the term preposterous for that particular one. I actually thought that Kendrick Lamar hijacked the song and turned it into a better song. I agree with you. I thought it was a really fun performance. What did you make of Metallica and the classical pianist Long Long?
Ooh. that's one I didn't really enjoy, and I kind of thought that looked like a classic Grammy head scratcher. It wasn't as bad as it could have been, but I mean, I just didn't get it.
I think the ooh was really all we needed to hear. That plus a little bit of the performance itself. Some of Metallica and Long Long from the Grammy performance last night out in L.A. Ben Cesario of the New York Times reporting in from L.A. And listeners, what was your takeaway from last night's Grammy Awards? You can post a comment on soundcheck.org or leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. And you can find our list of the 10 best Grammy moments in Vines on soundcheck.org. So, Ben, that particular collaboration didn't work for you. What about, let me ask you about the mass wedding presided over by Queen Latifah. I really wanted to like that. I understand and applaud the idea behind it, but it felt a lot like a stunt to me.
I can't really disagree with you. I mean, I think, you know, it's television, and these things are done, you know, with the knowledge of how they're going to play to the audience. And I do say that even though it was a even though you can call it a stunt, and I think you can be perfectly fair about calling it a stunt, I did think it was touching. I mean, I really did, and I applaud the Grammys for doing it, and Macklemore and Ryan Lewis for doing it, and I don't think it's out of line with just, you know, what they're all about. And, you know, when part of the origin of that segment was that they've had proposals on stage in their shows.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, they went one further with their big moment on TV. So, you know, you can call it a stunt, and I think you're not wrong. But, I mean, I also think it was kind of heartwarming.
On the other hand, I thought Kacey Musgraves, the choice of song that she sang on stage was, you know, a kind of a great way of getting at that same sort of tolerance and marriage equality issue.
Good point.
So she had a good day, good night, walked off with a couple of Grammys. But let's talk again about Lorde, the 17-year-old New Zealander whose Grammys included Song of the Year. She was not up for Best New Artist for some reason, but she certainly had a good night last night. What did you make of her live performance of her Song of the Year, Royals?
I thought it was shaky at first, and I think she was probably nervous, you know, and you got that sense from her acceptance speeches about just kind of being overwhelmed by the whole thing, but I thought it was moving.
Yeah, me too. Let's hear a little bit. This is Lorde live on the Grammy telecast last night.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies. I'm not proud of my address. In the torn up town, no postcode envy. But every song's like gold teeth, grey goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, dress in a hotel room, we don't care.
That's Lorde with the newly minted Song of the Year Grammy Award winner last night. Royals is the name of it. We're speaking with Ben Cesario of the New York Times, who is in L.A. and was there last night for the Grammys. And Ben, just one more question before I let you go. Aside from Jared Leto doing Walk on the Wild Side's first verse, sort of intoning it at a random point in the broadcast, there was no real Lou Reed tribute, which I was shocked at. Were you expecting something?
I was, too. I thought it was strange that there was no musical segment, although I did think that, you know, the thing with Jared Leto was prominent. I mean, there was a huge picture of him in the back of the stage, and Jared calling him a true genius who he lost. I mean, I thought they gave him respect, but it might have been cool to see a real performance.
Yeah, I really expected to see six guitarists out there, you know, all playing Sweet Jane or something, but it did not happen. On the other hand, lots of other stuff did happen. 30 couples now married who weren't a day ago, and lots of Grammys distributed, and lots of people who thought they were going to get some perhaps and didn't. Ben, was it a good evening overall?
I think it was, but it's, you know, the thing about the Grammys, it's long. It's 3.5 hours, and it was 21 performances and only 10 awards. You know, I mean, that's changed over the years. It's become much more reliant on the performances and much less on the awards. And, I mean, just as a viewer, I think that makes it tougher to watch. I wish that there was more emphasis on the awards.
Yeah. I'm with you, Ben. All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
Ben Cesario, music reporter for the New York Times, with us from L.A.
If you save yourself from marriage, you're a bore. If you don't save yourself from marriage, you're a horrible person. If you won't have a drink, then you're a prude. But they'll call you a drunk.
Music there from Grammy winner Kacey Musgraves. She won for Best Country Song and Best Country Album and performed this tune called Follow Your Arrow at last night's Grammy telecast. Coming up, we'll keep the country twang with New York alt-country singer and songwriter Laura Cantrell. She's got a new album out. She'll play some of it for us live in the studio next on Soundcheck.
I've been trying not to feel so mean, but I found myself crying to the washing machine. You know what I mean?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The last time that singer-songwriter Laura Cantrell joined us in the Soundcheck studio, she was paying tribute to the songs of Kitty Wells, one of the first great female stars of country music. Now, Laura Cantrell is back in our studio, this time with a new album full of original songs. It's called No Way There From Here, and it comes out on Tuesday. The Nashville-born, New York City-based musician is here with her band to play some songs for us today. This one's called Can't Wait, Laura Cantrell, live on Soundcheck. Song is called Can't Wait, and it is new from Laura Cantrell, singing and playing guitar, Mark Spencer playing guitar, doing some backing vocals, Kenny Kosek on fiddle, Franklin Bruno at our piano, Jeremy Chatsky playing the bass, and pretty much all of these folks have been here on Soundcheck before, all helping Laura out. She's playing songs from her new album called No Way There From Here, which is out on Tuesday. Hi, Laura.
Hey, John. How are
you? Song's called Can't Wait, which suggests a certain impatience, but you have been very patient in the making of this record.
I'm not sure that I've been... Well, yes, we've taken our time, let's put it that way. We've had a leisurely pace at times, but not always feeling so patient.
Well, there was the Kitty Wells record, which had one or two original songs, but a full album of Laura Cantrell songs. We got to go back to, like, 2005 or 7 or something.
Yes, no, 2005 we had the Humming by the Flowered Vine record.
Right.
So it's been several years. And, in fact, even that record and my previous ones didn't feature as many of my own original songs. So this is really the first time where I've written almost everything except for one song.
And a number of collaborations on this album, songwriting collaborations.
That's right.
Have you done that before?
You know, it's something I started to do after my daughter was born. I have a 7-year-old girl in school in Jackson Heights. And
hang on, let me do the math here. 2005. I think I begin to see.
Exactly. Put it all together. The big picture emerges. No, it definitely was a useful tool for me when I found myself with less free time for myself, but to help me be a little bit more productive. And sometimes it's great to just have somebody who you're working with tell you, you know, what's the good part of a song to keep and what's worth working on and
right.
what to, you know, maybe put back on the shelf or back in the oven for a little while. So
you co-wrote some stuff with Franklin here.
That's
who's
right.
At
Franklin
piano,
Bruno.
And with Camera Obscura's Tracy Ann Campbell,
the
Scottish indie pop band. And some songs with Amy Allison
as well.
Who I don't think I know. Who is she, a local?
Amy Allison is a local writer. She's actually the daughter of Mose Allison.
Oh, really?
Yes. And she's a local country singer-songwriter. You know, Mose's family was from Mississippi, and but he raised his family on Long Island. So she has this great mix of, like, Mississippi roots and a Long Island, you know, upbringing. And she's a really wonderful craftsperson. So she's been a great person to collaborate with. We did a couple songs that ended up on the record, and we have a couple more that we've
I want to play for people the lead-off track, just a little bit of it, because it's such a great song with such a great title. And this is one of the ones you and Amy co-wrote.
That's right.
It's called All the Girls Are Complicated. This is a little bit from the record by Laura Cantrell called No Way There From Here.
All the girls are complicated. All the girls will work you hard, and they break their hearts. It's just who they are. They're just working out who they are. All my friends are raving mad. Make me so crazy, but you know I'm glad that I've got someone I can lean upon. Oh, and I know I'm not the only one. From the ones who tend their looks, to the ones that mind their books, to the one who's got her hooks in you. You know she doesn't have a thing to prove.
That is a song from Laura Cantrell's new album, No Way There From Here, and that is from the album, the song co-written with Amy Allison. It's called All the Girls Are Complicated. Who's that aimed at?
Well, you know, I will say, it says it in the song, you know, all my friends are raving mad. You know, it's somewhat for friends, my sister, my 7-year-old girl. You know, we could see it in everybody, myself. So I felt like we were all fair game.
There's almost an echo of the Birds in some of the guitar playing on that track.
Well, I had always loved the sound of the 12-string guitar, and it's part of that. It's part of sort of classic pop sound that became part of country rock in the late '60s. When you mentioned the Birds, and It's part of the Beatles. You know, we love mm-hmm. to refer to that when we can. And
Graham Parsons.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you're in this PBS documentary called Nashville 2.0, The Rise of Americana. What do you make of... I mean, Americana's having yet another moment, it seems, you know, with Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yes. And... You know, it's interesting. I mean, there are cycles to all of these, you know, kind of trends in music, I guess, as you would put it. But I think that it's interesting now that Americana as a category of music would be recognized as something that contains all the elements of country and blues and folk that kind of don't fit into other commercial genres. Mm. And it's a little bit more expansive, a concept for a genre that could incorporate things that otherwise might not seem like they fit.
And that's kind of the interesting thing about Americana as a term is that it incorporates so many different things, it doesn't really mean anything. And yet,
that's
you know,
true.
Kind of like pornography, though. I know it when I see it, that sort of thing. What is the state of Americana these days?
Oh, I think it's, I don't know if I want to say if it's healthy or not. I think it's
well, that's a very presidential State of the Union kind yes. of term, so you can say that.
Well, I think it's an interesting place to find things. You know, there are really great singer-songwriters. Jason Isbell had a great year last year and
yep.
wonderful
coming
music.
Coming into the studio
right.
shortly.
And I like the idea that something like, you know, his music, he's from Alabama, and then the Alabama Shakes and, you know, all of these, the Luther Dickinson Sons, you know, the...
Right.
Or Jim Dickinson's Sons.
Yeah, the North Mississippi All-Stars.
You know, they could all kind of fit under an umbrella together because they do... There are... relationships, I think, between all these things, but they're not always played on the same channels on the radio. So that's the state of Americana.
Okay. The state of Americana as given to us by Laura Cantrell, the singer-songwriter whose new album is called No Way There From Here. It comes out on Tuesday. Laura and the band performing at Joe's Pub on Wednesday night and playing here today. You want to do the title track for us?
I would love to.
All right. The song is called No Way There From Here. Once again, Laura Cantrell with Mark Spencer on guitar, Kenny Kosick on fiddle, Franklin Bruno's at our piano, Jeremy Chatsky playing the bass. Give Laura a moment to strap on her guitar once again, and we'll hear the title track from the new record, No Way There From Here.
I was sitting in the dark as a band played on, listening to the words of an old southern song. It was a January day, but it felt just like June. I could feel the heat of the house getting late in the day. Your hand in mine as we made our way, cool green grass where we lay right down. When I knew who I was and who I wanted to be, but there's no way there from here, no bridge across the ocean, no path up through the mountains. A trip back through the years. Oh, the tears. There's no way there from here. No turn I might have taken. Each day when I awaken, the dream that seems so disappears. There's no way there from here. Pages of a book that fell from the shelf while the dishes shook. tattered bits of flattery. Not just for my vanity, I will take you out or tuck you in. Be there when your day begins. Hold you while you drift to sleep and be the one your dreams to keep. But there's no way there from here. No bridge across the ocean. No path up through the mountain. A trip back through the years. Oh, the tears. The dream that seems so clear disappears. There's no way there from here. I was sitting in the dark as the band played on, listening to the words of an old southern song.
That is a song by Laura Cantrell called No Way There From Here. You might have recognized another song towards the very end there as well. No Way There From Here is the name of Laura Cantrell's new album, out on Tuesday. She and the band are performing Wednesday night at Joe's Pub here in New York, and they're playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. Let's hear another song. This one's called Starry Skies.
Kibi. One, two, one, two, three. You're under starry skies, and it's all right. Yeah, on your own in the world at night, and it's all right. I hope your river's running wide and deep. Christmas time and it's all right. I feel the traffic pulling like the tide, and I've got a wind in my sail tonight. It's just fine. Yes, yes, it's all right. When I dream myself to sleep, don't you know it's just fine? Yes, yes, it's all right. Yes, it's so fine. Yeah, trucks humming up high. Highway 9, yes, it's so fine. Big yellow moon in my window pane, a glimpse of silver from a passing plane. It's just fine. Yes, yes, it's all right. When I dream fine, don't you know it's just fine? Don't you know it's just fine? Yes, yes, it's all right.
Laura Cantrell and her band doing Starry Skies. In the key of B, apparently. So now we know the key, we know the rhythm, we got everything there. Starry Sky is the name of it from Laura Cantrell's latest album called No Way There From Here, which comes out on Tuesday, but Laura and the band performing it live here in the Soundcheck studio today. So Laura, the record is coming out on Thrift Shop Recordings.
That's right.
This is a reference to the Radio Thrift Shop. The radio show that you did for so many years?
It's my global micro brand, the Radio Thrift Shop. Yes, you know, it's basically a self-released album. We've done it through a distributor that worked with Diesel Only, my old label, that was also run by my husband, Jeremy. You know, the time had come to, you know, just kind of take things into my own hands. So, yes, it is a reference to the thrift shop.
You haven't done the Radio Thrift Shop in a while, right?
I have not. I've been basically, I call myself emeritus, DJ emeritus at WFMU.
A recovering radio announcer.
Exactly. I would love to do some more radio, but it's tough schedule-wise.
You sat in this chair when I was away.
I did. I have to tell you, this was the hardest show I've ever done.
Well, now, the last time you were on that side of the microphone on the show, I mentioned earlier, you were doing the Kitty Wells record. That was 2011.
Right.
She was still alive then.
She was.
She passed away the next year.
She did.
And you wrote something really lovely about her for the Daily Beast. What do you want people to remember about Kitty Wells?
Just the how much great music she made. You know, she kind of becomes a factoid in a history lesson about country music. First, you know, woman to make an album or whatever, first million selling, first single, you know, those are all these little facts about her. But she actually had this incredible career where she made 50 plus albums and a lot of great heartfelt music in her catalog that is not that well remembered these days. So that was really my impulse, was to bring attention back to her music.
Well, glad that you're now bringing that attention back to your own music.
Thank
with the
you.
New record. It's called No Way There From Here. Laura Cantrell, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up next, 30 years ago, the filmmaker Godfrey Reggio teamed up with composer Philip Glass on an influential art film franchise. Now, Godfrey Reggio tells us about his latest collaboration with Glass, called Visitors, next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 30 years ago, the filmmaker Godfrey Reggio and the composer Philip Glass collaborated on a movie that was silent except for Glass's bewitching score. That film was Koyaanisqatsi, a Hopi Indian word meaning life out of balance. That has become an art film classic and spawned two follow-ups in the so-called Katsi trilogy. There was Pawakatsi and Nakoikatsi. But the latest collaboration between Reggio and Glass has, mercifully, an English title. It's called Visitors, and it brings Godfrey Reggio back to soundcheck. Hi, Godfrey.
Thank you, John.
So the title is in English, but there is no spoken language in this film.
Right.
But there has developed over the years a certain visual language, I would say.
Yes, but let me add this, that Philip's music is the equivalent of an emotive narrative for the film. It's like an armchair in which to sit, as it were, and let these images just come over you. In most theatrical films, a composer writes what's called music cues. They can be anywhere from a few seconds to as long as a few minutes. In this case, we're looking for a full symphonic score or a full symphonic language that can partner or dance with these images.
Is that why Visitors is subtitled A Film by Godfrey Reggio, Philip Glass, and John Kane? I mean, I understand you're the filmmaker, John Kane, the visual designer, but Philip Glass as a kind of co-maker?
Well, I see him as a co-equal partner. We like have a bilateral body. I'm one half, he's the other. I can't at this point think of the films without thinking of Philip. Even in this late date, we're just beginning to understand the language that we put together. So it's a real opportunity each time to go back to him and ask him not to give us something from the past, but to do something completely different.
Now, just by virtue of the fact that you're not asking for cues, for those little 10-second or maybe you get 2 minutes, you know, in a feature film, that would be an eternity for a composer. But the fact that it is just Philip's score, that's different enough. Do you then edit the film to the music? How?
It's like a hand-in-glove operation. One medium motivates the other. I asked Philip never to write note one until he's been completely marinated in the ethos, the image, the point of view, the whole dramatic structure, as it were, of the film. Once that happens, we do a dramatic blocking. It has temporal values. It talks about instruments. At the end of the day, however, it's Philip Glass that must write the score. So we do everything possible to put him on the platform we're on and then count on his perspicacity to come forward with a voice, as it were, for the film.
All right. And Philip has had lots of that, whatever that word was, perspicacity.
Well, he's just extremely, let's say, insightful.
Yes.
And never disappoints.
And this is the music that we hear from Philip Glass in this film by Godfrey Reggio. Music by Philip Glass. The piece is called Novus Ordo Seclorum, New Order of the World. And that is an excerpt of the music that Philip has written for Godfrey Reggio's latest film called Visitors. Open now here in New York at Sunshine Cinema. It'll be opening in other major cities around the country throughout February and March. Check out visitorsfilm.com for details of when it might be coming to a theater near you. Godfrey Reggio is with me on Soundcheck today. How many collaborations with Philip? Is this six?
This is the sixth collaboration.
Right. what has, and he has, you know, he has been inspired by your films to produce some of his most dramatic and colorful scores. So this is clearly a collaboration that has worked extraordinarily well over a long period of time. Koyaanisqatsi is now 30 years old. What was the initial attraction to you of working in silence or with only music?
First of all, it's not for lack of love of the language that there's no overt narration in the film. It's because I feel our language no longer describes the world in which we live. We see the world through language, but our language is an antique form. The world that it's looking at is not here anymore. We live now in technology as the new and comprehensive host of life. So to have music in effect becomes a meta-language, like art, like religion. These are meta-languages. They're languages beyond the spoken word that we have. To have Philip do the score is to somehow give a direct communion to the viewer. It doesn't proceed through metaphor. It's something that goes directly to the heart of each viewer. In that sense, I couldn't think of a better narration for the film.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of not using spoken language, we've talked a little bit about this before, but you studied to be a monk.
I was a Christian brother. I studied to be one, but I was a Christian brother. I had final vows. Christian brothers have many schools on the East Coast, as they do all over the world. I was a Christian brother from the age of 14 to 28.
Wow.
And at the age of 28, Che Guevara was a person called Giovanni Roncalli, Pope John the 23rd. To me, an extraordinary person, similar to the pontiff that's there now, Pope Francis, a man with a big heart who was not interested only in dogma, was interested in the heart of people, the soul of people, the suffering that they were going through. So Giovanni Roncalli said, question everything, accept nothing, even the structure of the church. As a young, zealous monk, that was music to my ears, and it got me thrown out of my order.
Wow. And how did you end up making films? Had you begun to do that already, even
as
a monk?
Yes. No, not... I was working with street gangs as a Christian brother. During that time, I had the good fortune to see the film by Luis Buñuel called Los Olvidados, or The Young and the Damned, The Forgotten Ones. When I saw Buñuel's film, I knew it was not about entertainment. I, in my vernacular, had a spiritual experience. Mm. It watermarked me. It was an infliction on my soul. It really touched me, and it, as it were, changed my life. I felt if film could be that powerful, it's perhaps something to look into.
Well, and, you know, I think I certainly would not be the first person to use the word meditation to describe a lot of your filmmaking. I mean, they are sort of meditations on who we are, our place in the world, and in this new film, Visitors, maybe even our place off of the world. There were some striking shots of the moon, apparently from orbiting around the moon. Where did those come from?
Those came from digital technology. The shots that I wanted to have that I saw with my eyes were in 1080, which means the resolution was too low in order to be able to put it on a big screen. So over a period of almost 5 months, people at the Optic Nerve Studio recreated the moon by using NASA maps and recreated it in a 3D digital format.
So now you mentioned the format of 1080, which people know because if they have HD TVs, that's
right,
what they're seeing at home. This is shot in a format called 4K.
Well, it's shot actually, we shot much of it in 5K, but it's now projected in 4K in theaters. Theaters are just starting to bring in 4K projectors. I think they're principally used for 3D movies, two of them, but you can have them set up for one projection, and it gives you more resolution, more, as it were, material on the screen. In a flat medium, which is what I work in, a surface medium, the key to that is the illusion of depth. Black brings out the depth, especially if you have a little silver in that black. It gives it a dimensionality.
Is that why the film is in black and white?
That's one of the reasons. There are several. When things are in color, it contemporizes the image. It makes it seem present. I was looking for an image that was off-planet.
And off-planet is the name of the biggest piece of music that Philip Glass has written for this movie. Again, the film is called Visitors by my guest Godfrey Reggio, and here is some of that music. Planet is the name of that music from Philip Glass, written for the new movie Visitors by Godfrey Reggio. It is the sixth collaboration between the filmmaker and the composer. Visitors is open now here in New York at the Sunshine Cinema, opening in various other cities in February and March. Check out the website visitorsfilm.com for details. Godfrey Reggio here with me in the Soundcheck studio. Let me ask you to explain Off Planet.
My own point of view is that we live off-planet. We live in a technological environment now. We're on speed in rush hour, outrunning our future. We live off of the Earth, however. We use it as resource to tool the global world in which we live. One could say that we've lived now, we're in the third epoch, the epoch of nature, the epoch of culture, and now the epoch of technology. Mm-hmm. But we keep thinking that technology is something we use. It's the misuse or good use that determines its value. Technology is not something we use, at least from my limited point of view. It's something we breathe. It's as ubiquitous as the air outside of us. It has an infinite appetite, and it operates on a finite world. Anything we could have said about the divines in the past, we can say about technology now. It's remaking the world to its own image and likeness. And because we're so human an animal, we become the environment we live in. Mm. We become what we see, touch, smell, taste. We are becoming technology.
So you must have, then, a very ambivalent relationship with the very technology that you have used to make this film.
Indeed, it's a contradiction. I acknowledge that, but embrace it. I live in the American Southwest in New Mexico. There are many big forest fires. Frequently, one has to start a fire in order to deal with the fire. If I want to make a film, I have to use technology. It's based in motors and speeds now in digital domain. So to embrace that contradiction is what this is about.
The film is called Visitors by Godfrey Reggio. It is an extraordinary, beautiful movie. 30 years ago, when you and Philip Glass did Koyaanisqatsi, it was very much viewed as a head trip, you know? It must be gratifying to you that that view has kind of evolved and matured over
Well, it
the years.
Has for some. I can remember we got extraordinarily bad reviews for Koyaanisqatsi from many sources, including some here in New York. So that's been true for all the films I've done. They're not mass man films.
But they do, each of them seems to have an image, at least one, that stays with you for years. For me, in Koyaanisqatsi, it's that final shot, which seems to go on forever and has that iconic music by Philip Glass. In Pawakatsi, there's the shot of, I don't know if it's Lagos or Mumbai, it's some city with an impossibly large moon rising over it. I don't know how you did that, but there is a shot in this film, and I don't want to give it away because it's a real kind of coup de théâtre, but there is a shot here that has you know, that I can already feel is going to be staying with me for a very, very long time.
Well, you know, with a film like this, there's a Latin term. It says quid quid recipitur. Excuse my Latin. But what it means is one receives according to their vessel, their bowl. We all have different vessels. We all have different bowls. What the filmmakers attempt to put into the film at the beginning is not what it's about. It's what exists after it's finished. It takes on a life of its own, and it speaks differently to different people. It's aimed at the solar plexus. It's aimed at the aesthetic triplets that reside within us all: sensation, emotion, and perception. All of us have different variations on that.
That the film is Visitors, open now here in New York at the Sunshine Cinema, a film by Godfrey Reggio with score by Philip Glass. And Godfrey, it's great to have you back with us on Soundcheck today. Thank you so
pleasure.
Much.
Pleasure, John.
This is the music that Philip Glass wrote for that shot that I was talking about, and a little hint in the title, it's called Reciprocal Gaze. Join us on Tuesday night for coverage of the President's State of the Union Address. On Wednesday, Soundcheck will return with a conversation with Herb Alpert, the trumpeter, hitmaker, record mogul, sculptor, and philanthropist. Herb Alpert, Wednesday on Soundcheck. Plus, the Canadian alt-country musician Doug Paisley joins us to play live. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.